Facebook.com.
Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, March 2nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what I like to call our Thursday meeting show. Two professional handicappers join us. The first, Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. The second, Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We've got a ton of college basketball stuff to cover here on today's show. We're also going to chat with Brad about the addition of his Powers Picks newsletter that's come out with his spring football preview. It is loaded with information, tons of great stuff in here. So we'll get some thoughts from him. So we'll get some thoughts from him on that at the start of today's show. One quick thing I want to mention, actually a couple of quick things. The first, MLB season win totals, the AL Central will come out today. I'll post those up later this afternoon. So if you're checking those out, you'll see the AL Central later. And then the second thing, as I've mentioned, trying to do no shows next Thursday and Friday or the following Thursday and Friday. We'll just do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the next 2 weeks. I've already talked with Brad and Ralph to get them on a different day, so we should be able to hear from them probably on Tuesdays for the next 2 weeks. But makes the most sense. Try to accommodate our guests here with March Madness and, of course, all the conference tournament action going on next week. So lots of things going on. Want to try and fit everybody in and also make it so it's a little bit easier for our listeners to get all of this information to be ready for Thursday and Friday. And, of course, as we can, we'll try to incorporate Saturday and Sunday, especially when it comes to March Madness, because sometimes we'll just kind of know who's probably going to win some of those games so we can look ahead to some of those compelling matchups over the weekend. We'll go ahead and bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Bradley, what's happening today, buddy? How are you?
Hey, not too much here in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas on a beautiful morning. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Things are really going to pick up in Vegas here. Four conference tournaments. That's incredible. It's going to be very busy out there for sure.
Yeah, no question. Starts actually tomorrow, West Coast conference tournament over at the Orleans. A little bit of momentum taken away with Gonzaga losing to BYU last weekend. Tickets were going crazy. I'm sure it's still sold out there. And then, boy, next week, a college basketball lover's dream here in this town with three tournaments going on at the same time, the Mountain West, Pac-12, and WAC. And that Pac-12 tournament, especially the semifinal round, if you got an Oregon, a UCLA, and Arizona, and maybe a Utah or USC, I mean, three of those four teams are Elite Eight caliber teams. So should be a hell of a Pac-12 tournament here next weekend.
You going to go and check any of them out?
Oh, yeah, if it finds time, if I can get away from the computer screen there as far as the betting action goes, yeah, I wouldn't mind taking an afternoon and going to a game and maybe two afternoons. So with it being so convenient, I'm sure I can tell you this, Adam, I'm sure I can find a seat in the Mountain West tournament with that conference being so down compared to what it was 4 or 5 years ago. That's on my side of town. I might actually sneak over and check that one out, believe it or not.
Well, and one of the things that's been taking up a lot of your time, obviously you've got college basketball and the NBA going on, but you and I were talking about this a little bit in our DM conversation yesterday. I don't think anybody, in fact, I know nobody in this industry has put in the amount of work that you have for the 2017 college football season. You've got your edition of Power Picks out, or Powers Picks, excuse me, with your 2017 spring football preview. This is an exceptional piece of work, man. You should be very proud of it.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate that. I would love to be, world-class when it comes to college basketball, but the reality was if I wanted to be, then I'd probably have to give up the football handicapping because, I mean, if you really want to get a jump on the college basketball season, I mean, you got to start looking at stuff in October. Well, what's going on in October football? So, well, one thing I do, and I'm a firm believer on, you got a choice in this industry. You can be a little bit above average in every sport and handicap every sport. And, I tip my cap to those guys that do it. And some guys are better than others that are able to bounce from sport to sport. Or you can specialize in a sport and try to be world class, best in the world at one sport, and dabble in the other sports. And that's what I've chosen. I've chosen college football as the sport that I would like to be a trendsetter and maybe even, a guy that sets the market, at least in some of the early games of the year. My recommendations have moved lines considerably the last couple of years. So that's what I try to do. I try to get a jump on it. I never I never not look at college football. There's never a day that doesn't go by that I don't look at it. And that issue that's up there right now at bradpowersports.com, completely free. I mean, it covers just about anything that you would want in college football at this time of year, whether it's the week one lines, breaking them down, week one college football schedule, early consensus top 40, some early power ratings, recruiting, spring practice start times, some Heisman odds, returning starters for every single team. You know, I give you five sleeper teams to win it all as far as, you know, 30 to 1 in the future markets. I got my early top 10 as far as pure Vegas power ratings, write-ups on each team, grading and ranking the new head coaches, five most improved teams, every single schedule that's set, it's up there. I mean, it's about as much information as you can put in 8-9 pages as anyone has done. And, you know, I don't normally challenge anyone, but I think this would be safely the case where I don't think anyone's put in the amount of work as far as college football goes for the 2017 season like I've done already.
No, this is exceptional. And like you said, it's completely free. So go on over there, check out what you would get with the Powers Picks newsletter here throughout the season. And, you know, I think that, you know, the deals that you advertise here on the show are totally worth the small prices that you're asking for this thing. What's amazing to me is in looking here at the spring practice start and finish dates, man, there are spring games this weekend. Illinois, Duke, Appalachian State. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, by my count, I think it was yesterday, the day before, 31 teams in college football have already started spring practice. And in the next week, about another 30 teams are going to start it up. And, yeah, you do have teams that are already going to be finishing spring. So it's not – I know most of the people, and deservedly so, all the attention's on March Madness. And obviously that still takes up most of my time this time of year because, I mean, I love March Madness as much as the next guy. But – I mean, there's a lot of football stuff going on right now, and if you want to, you know, get a leg up on the season, why not dive a little bit and dabble a little bit into, you know, doing some early spring practice reading. You can kind of get a jump on the teams, and I mean, let's be honest. I come from a publication in Phil Steele Publications that excelled as far as, you know, following the college football teams in the off season, so it's kind of been ingrained in my blood. Here for the last almost decade here.
Well, make sure you check that out over at bradpowersports.com. But Brad, let's head back over to college basketball here. That is the sport that's going on, the sport that most people are going to be interested in, although it's never a bad thing to get a jump on some of those other markets. You know, obviously we got a lot of baseball stuff going on at bangthebook.com. So, you know, it's not a bad thing to make sure you get all that preseason work taken care of. But let's talk about conference tournament futures betting here. Is that something that you do, or are you still focused mostly on, you know, handicapping the individual games?
No, it's something that I'll do because, I mean, it's available for me to – a lot easier for me to walk up and bet them now that I'm located here in Vegas. So it's something that I haven't partaken too much in past couple of years, outside of maybe one or two, but it's something I'll jump into. And, looking at it, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't jumped too much as far as a smaller conference. I'll be perfectly frank with you. I'm not looking at, hey, is there any value in the Northeast Conference future odds as far as the tournament goes? No, I'm not going that far. But, you know, I'll throw out a couple as far as what to look for next week. And I think it's a couple of unique situations that at least you need to pay attention to. A couple of the bigger tournaments. I mean, the ACC has been played in the state of North Carolina since its inception for the most part, which obviously gives huge advantages to Duke and North Carolina and the other North Carolina schools. This year, it's moving to Brooklyn. And I actually think that gives an advantage to Syracuse, obviously. They're regionally located in there. They're used to playing from all their years in the Big East, in the Big Apple. Notre Dame's a team that has a huge following in the New York area. Again, they're used to playing in that area of the country from their Big East days. Louisville's a team that's going to be used to it. So I know we're going to talk about, as far as, you know, a little bit shading in a little bit of home court advantage. That I think that's going to be significant for two or three of those schools as far as the ACC tournament. And obviously, you know, North Carolina and Duke will bring their following, but not nearly as much as what they've had in the past. And another one, I mean, the Big Ten tournament's been played, obviously in the Midwest, Chicago and Indianapolis since its inception since 1998. It moves over to Washington, D.C. This season, and I think that gives a huge advantage to one program and that's the Maryland Terrapins. And you know, last I saw, they were 9-1. I mean, you're going to get some heavy home court advantage for Maryland. Obviously, you know, Ohio State and the Michigans. I mean, you're dealing with big alumni bases, and they'll have some support, but nowhere near the support from your average casual fan, you know, looking to make a 2-3 hour car drive. That's not going to be the case there for those Big Ten schools. So Maryland might be a team that has a unique advantage in the Big Ten conference tournament. So those are a couple of things that I am looking to maybe take advantage of, because I don't know if they're going to be necessarily priced in the lines.
Well, and I think that this is a really good time to talk about something with this, or about talk about something like this with you, because you've, for a long time, you've been a handicapper. Now that you're out there in Vegas, it's much easier to be a bettor. So you have the opportunity, as you said, you know, it's a lot more convenient to go down, slap some of these futures prices in there. And then also you can set yourself up for some hedging possibilities. So let's talk about that a little bit. Talk about the learning curve that comes along with that, because sure, you'd like to pick the winner. And obviously if Maryland wins at 9-1, you're thrilled about that. But also at the same time, you're looking simply for opportunities to guarantee profit. So how does that change the way that you, you know, approach these things compared to how you, you know, would have done it in the past?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And keep in mind, betting and handicapping, two completely different things. And it's tough to, you know, I bet a little bit differently than what I handicap. Keep in mind, you know, I'm dealing with guys all over the country as far as my service. I got guys that don't have the access. I still have, you know, a lot of my guys are dealing, especially in the Midwest, still dealing with the local bookies. So they're not going to be not being able to take advantage of anywhere near as far as the amount of action. Some of the people that have offshore accounts and obviously people that live here locally in Vegas. So, you know, I handicap on a very generic level. I like to go a little bit, if anyone's been a part of my service, I do try to deep dive it more as far as, hey, here's where the money's going and all that. But as far as the release of the picks, you know, I don't get too complicated. I try to make sure that every pick that I put out for the most part is, you know, access to everyone. I don't like having, you know, one customer base that's, you know, say I did really well in the futures markets and this and that. I mean, I'll give them out, but I try not to go too strong because I don't want to have different levels of my customer base with different profitable bankrolls. Me, I guess, you know, I'm probably more conservative as far as the handicapping goes for that reason. But when it comes to me personally betting, I'm probably a little bit more aggressive. There's hedge opportunities. I mean, the last thing you want to do as a handicapper is give out a play. And you know, you can't be, you know, talking about giving out the other side. But, I mean, say you give out a play, the line moves 2 points. I don't think people realize how much a half a point line move can mean in the college basketball betting markets. I'm a guy that just because I put out the play, if the line moves and I think there's actually opportunity on the other side, you know, I'm not afraid to buy back. It's definitely, you're right, a learning curve for me. I came in pretty cold. I came in from a service that was, you know, pretty generic as far as the handicapping went, and we were a football only. So I still have a lot to learn. I would even argue that you yourself, Adam Burke, probably have more experience from a betting aspect than what I do as far as following it. And betting and managing your bankroll. I was a guy that was just betting 5 to 7 to 10 college football and NFL games a week. So that's been a big adjustment for me, you know, understanding, you know, the market entries and you know, when to buy back some of your picks and all that. I haven't figured it out yet, and I am completely frank and candid with that. But I'm a quick learner, and I've learned a lot this season, and we're going to continue. That's going to be the off-season homework for me as soon as March Madness is over.
It's been really good for me to have a show like this and to be able to crowdsource the different opinions and, you know, learn about these different opportunities that are out there, and hopefully that's something that's really been beneficial for our listeners as well. But let's talk about the handicapping of games here. I mean, I think handicapping conference tournament futures is one thing. Betting them is probably the most important element of it, knowing what to bet, how much to hedge, all that type of thing. But in terms of your handicapping for the postseason, it's very unique. It's nothing like the regular season. Teams are playing back-to-backs, 3 games in 3 days, 4 games in 4 days. They're playing at neutral sites that they may or may not be familiar with. How do you account for these adjustments when you're handicapping games?
You know, number one, I mean, like I just got done saying, every half point, the point matters. So make sure you're putting in They're quote unquote neutral, but you know, let's be honest, some fan bases are can have a couple thousand in attendance, and other teams could have just, you know, the friends and family. They got 50 people in attendance. So make sure you're giving, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be 2 or 3 points, but, you know, just shade a little bit of home court advantage for some teams as far as, you know, give them a point, point and a half. You know, how have they done in past history in the conference tournament? So that's a starting off point for me. Obviously, I mean, everyone starts off with what happened as far as the previous meetings, if they have occurred throughout the course of the season. Was there any outlier performances in them? If they met one time, say a team had, you know, just so happened to have their worst shooting night of the entire season and lost the game by 20, when the reality is that wasn't just necessarily the case. Maybe some things happened in those games. I mean, the general betting public, we'll look at that type of game. Oh, the team lost by 20, and they're only laying 2 in this game. But you got a deep dive as far as the previous meetings. Another thing that I like looking at is, you know, let's look at depth. I mean, you were mentioning Ohio Valley. Both of those games last night went to overtime. Well, look at the depth of some of these teams. What's their rotation? Are they playing 6 guys, 7 guys? Is it a team like Florida State that can throw a wave at you with 10 guys? When you're playing back-to-back-to-back, I definitely prefer to have the deeper team, especially when you're playing that second game or even that third game as you get deeper into the conference tournaments. SMU is a great team in the American Athletic, but been following them throughout the course of the season. They only play 6 guys for the most part. So while I think they're the class of the league, they might be at a little bit of a disadvantage come if they make it to the conference tournament championship game. So, again, home courts, I think, a value for me. You know, appropriately evaluating what happened in the previous meetings, and then also, you know, trying to play on the teams that have a lot more depth than some of the other teams.
You know, something I just kind of thought about a little bit here, and obviously it's not the same situation, but it's not completely comparing apples and oranges either. When you talk about college football, you know, your bread and butter, obviously, when you look at teams that are struggling going into that break before the bowl game, you know, you kind of have some perception changes about that team. The number comes out for the bowl game, maybe people look to fade them right away. Some people may look to back them right away, expecting a bounce back. What about these teams that, you know, wrap up the regular season in kind of disappointing fashion? Maybe they lose 4 straight, 5 out of 6, something like that, head into the conference tournament. If they're good teams, are those teams that you want to play on, thinking that, you know, they're going to adopt this philosophy of, hey, it's the postseason now, let's wipe the slate clean?
Great point. I'm not blindly betting on those teams, on all those teams, but I think, you know, I like to play on those teams that struggle down the stretch, because let's face it, conference tournament gives you new life. You know, for some of the great teams like your North Carolinas and your Dukes and your Kansases, and let's be honest, the conference tournament for the most part, that doesn't mean as much to them as it does some of the other teams. So, you know, I look as far as the motivation aspect, and more often than not, you know, the market, you know, fades those teams. They sell them. I'm so glad you brought up as far as the college football bowls. One of my favorite play-ons is a team that comes into the bowl season with 4 or 5 straight non-covers. Hawaii was a team this year, struggled down the stretch, I think failed to cover 4 or 5 straight. And then lo and behold, they beat Middle Tennessee outright as a dog. And that's almost money every single year as far as the bowl action. And I think, you know, more often than not, I think you can catch some value. The teams that struggled the last couple of weeks of the season, you know, people are going to – and let's be honest, college basketball is a very unique betting market to begin with. I mean, it's something that the public and even some handicappers – and you can throw myself included in here – not following it religiously November and December. It gets jumped into in January, gets really started to bet into in the month of February, and then it's game on, where the entire world's betting it in March. So, I mean, you start to find some value betting against, you know, popular public perception, and I think a lot of it starts the last couple weeks of the regular season, and if those teams perform very poorly, I mean, the public has seen that, and I think you can catch some extra value playing against that, starting with the conference tournament. But always, you know, make sure – you know, it's not because of injuries, depth issues, and always make sure they got the proper motivation, because, I mean, I hate to say it, but some teams just, you know, if it's been a disappointing season, you know, sometimes, I mean, the conference tournament's not going to change anything. I mean, it's just been thrown in the trash as far as the entire season goes.
Well, this is something we could probably talk about here in our segment in about 2 weeks' time. Again, we'll try to get you on either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday here over the next couple of weeks, but that's one thing we could talk about is, those pretty good teams that were one and done in the conference tournament, maybe won a game and then bowed out gracefully. You know, if their play-on teams come March Madness, and if they're teams that, you know, maybe you want to take a look at from a future standpoint, because people will sell that team. You know, if somebody loses, let's say Villanova goes out and loses their first game in the Big East, I mean, Villanova is still a hell of a team. No matter what happens in that conference tournament, they're still a phenomenal team, but you may have some people, you know, kind of selling them a little bit because, oh, you know, they lost in the first round and they haven't played in a week and a half and, you know, all these types of things. So that's something that we can talk about here in some of these future segments. One other thing I do want to ask you about conference tournaments here, with the fact that games are played on consecutive days, which is something we don't see in college basketball, it changes market entry because you don't get overnight lines. So how does that factor into what you're handicapping day to day?
It probably helps me because I'm not a night owl. I know it helps me as far as being here on the West Coast. I mean, the overnights are out here relatively nice, but you know, it helps me because you know, I'm up well before the sun comes up. So you know, you don't get that advantages as far as, you know, getting the overnights, which are some of the softer numbers. It's also a little bit of disadvantage because you don't have that huge, you know, lag period. Not lag period. As far as you know, that huge win, you know, 12 to even in some cases 24 hours of public betting. So that kind of hurts you a little bit. But, you know, the market's a little bit more, I think you could take advantage of it because they're just, I mean, it's more like an opener. And if it comes out in the morning of the game, there just isn't that time, that you know, big period of time where people can you can take advantage of it. And if something's wrong, well, it doesn't have very many hours to get corrected as far as the betting market goes. So, I mean, the market entry for me, I mean, obviously is going to have to be probably more often than not day of the game. Again, I'm speaking to a pretty large customer base. So, I mean, for most of my guys, they're not betting overnights for the most part to begin with, even in the regular season. They're waiting until game day. And you got to be careful as far as your updates. Now, as far as a release schedule for me, you know, sometimes, you know, I have a couple of, and I actually do it on Saturdays, because you're dealing with big cards. Sometimes you're dealing with lines that just aren't out, and sometimes it takes you a while to, hey, why is that line you and me were talking before the show? Hey, trying to understand the lines takes you a little bit of while when you got 50, 60 games on a schedule and the line just popped up, you know, either on the overnight or that morning. I go to multiple release schedules. You know, I got the teams that I, you know, have pinpointed as far as who to play on in particular matchups, and if the number's just right, then I'll fire on it. But then you got the lines where, you know, it requires a deep dive. So a lot of times with my customers, hey, we're going to have a couple release times here where we're going to have some stuff as far as the early games, the noons and the 2 p.m. Eastern tips. And then we'll have a second update as far as, you know, later in the afternoon for the evening action. So that's how I try to adjust to it. But I wish I had a 100% concrete answer. But then again, I don't think really anyone does because it's such a unique market entry point. And, you know, it's different. It's easier if you're just a bettor and you do it for a living as far as betting. You can adjust to it, whatever. I mean, if you want to wake up 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning and start betting it, I mean, that's one thing. But you know, when you're also a handicapper and you're dealing with a big customer base, you also got to make it convenient for your customers and at least appropriate on when you're releasing these picks, because if they're moving around, and again, a half point matters, you don't want a large portion of your customer base not being able to take advantage of the picks and the lines that you're giving out.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too. I mean, and this is the game that you're referencing that we talked about before we came on the show here. Murray State and Morehead State in the OVC Conference Tournament. Murray State won in double overtime last night. Their number comes out Murray State plus one. It's 3.5 in the blink of an eye. So if you're a bettor and you're sitting there watching the odds screen, you know, you look at that minus one. If you like it, you take it. But then at 3.5, as a handicapper who has customers, you go, I don't know if I can really sell this, you know, because you're kind of walking a couple of fine lines. For one thing, everyone always talks about get the best number, get at least the best number that you can. Well, this thing's already moved 2.5 points. So even if you like it up to maybe 4.5 or 5, it's kind of almost hypocritical in a way to put something out like that where it's already lost 2.5 points of value.
It is. And that's, again, the fine line you got to walk between being a bettor and a handicapper. And let's be honest, I mean, most of the customer base, if you to win and win consistently in the industry, you got to do it full time for the most part. I mean, especially in today's day and age, you got to at least have a significant windows of opportunities. If you're going to be a better, you got to almost do it full time. Now, if you're a recreational guy that's doing it for the entertainment value, and let's be honest, most people are, then, you know, that type of thing's not going to affect you too much. Yeah, I wouldn't give it out if it's already moved that. But I'll be honest with you also, Adam, there's times where it's already moved a point. And I'll still like the game, and I know I'm not getting the absolute best line, but you're forced a lot of times to give it out, even though it's not the best number, because I mean, look, I mean, I don't know how you could, because a lot of the open overnights are soft. I mean, if you're gonna, you know, as far as releasing picks, if you're not gonna release them on the overnight to your customers, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, and you want to give out the absolute best numbers on the game. I mean, you're not going to have too many picks as far as a daily basis. I mean, if you truly only want to give out the absolute best number. Now, a lot of times what I do is I'll play against line moves. If I felt they've moved too much from the overnight, well, I'm not afraid to play against it. And that's the one opportunity that you get if you're playing against them where you can get the best number from playing against a significant line move.
And this is why I always tell our listeners, who I imagine the vast majority, 95, 96% of them, are not full-time bettors, just get the best number that you can. As long as you like the game, you know, get the best number that you can, because they have jobs, they have families, they have kids, they have all this stuff going on. You can't sit there and watch the odds screen all day. It's just you just can't do it. So if you like a game, try to get it somewhere before it becomes the worst of the number, and you know, go with it from there. I mean, everything is a learning experience here in this industry for pretty much everybody, no matter how long you've done this. And so as long as you're not consistently getting the worst of the number and you're still getting some sort of line value, then I definitely think that it's an endeavor worth pursuing. We talked a lot about conference tournaments here, Brad. Let's talk about the rest of the regular season. We still have two conference games left for a lot of the conferences that haven't started their tournaments yet. One for some of the smaller conferences that still have to start the postseason. But we still have two in the ACC and the SEC and all that type of thing. What are you looking at here in the rest of the regular season? Do you, you know, have a set framework that you want to try to follow?
Well, and I'll say this. I mean, the lines are pretty sharp as far as the opportunities are probably in the conference tournaments at this point. Regular season, I mean, they're pretty sharp. I mean, I'll give you multiple, and you can do this almost every night, but I mean, multiple examples from last night, like a Notre Dame Boston College falls right at the number at 16. You know, Florida, depending on what number you got, I mean, as far as the opening number, that the Florida Arkansas game fell between, you know, a bucket off of that one. Michigan Northwestern, depending on what line you got, looks like Northwestern cash, but that was played close to the number. A lot of these are going to be, the numbers are pretty tight here. They're not too far off. This point, as far as the regular season goes, one thing I think gets overplayed, senior day, I think it'd be a negative for a lot of teams, especially teams with multiple seniors. I mean, the general thing is, oh, they're going to really want to play for the seniors. Well, I can tell you this, especially if they have pregame activities, I mean, that's a very emotional, you know, time for them. I mean, they bring their parents out and everything. You see some tears flowing and stuff. And what I have found in the past is a lot of times them teams get off to a slow start with all the emotions that are going on. It takes you 5, 6, 7 minutes to get into the game to get adjusted. And a lot of times, you know, if you're able to take advantage of first halves, a lot of times, you know, they're play against teams as far as senior day, especially if they're laying big numbers. Obviously, the major example, Gonzaga from last weekend, you know, laying a big number, especially if they're laying a big number. Sometimes I like playing against them, and you know, even in the second half, if you look at and you pinpoint particular coaches, I mean, some just put in the walk-ons late in the game, and so you got to be careful laying again some significant numbers. There's backdoor opportunities because the walk-ons are put in, and you know, I'll use North Carolina Duke, which is going to be the biggest game of the weekend, primetime ESPN. You know, Roy Williams in the past has actually started his walk-ons in those games. Now he gets them out of there relatively quick. It's not like they're playing the first 4 minutes of the game until the TV timeout, but you know, that's something to look for, how coaches handle senior day for the most part. A lot of times I think it gets overplayed. I think the emotions can be a negative for a lot of teams, especially teams with multiple seniors.
Anything you like for tonight? Any free pick you want to throw out to our listeners?
You know what, Let's go to, well, I'll tell you what, the number just got hammered. I was going to play the under here in the Golden State Chicago. Let's give it out anyway. I think Golden State's a little bit tired. Obviously, Kevin Durant out for the game for them. Chicago's the best under team in the NBA, 36-24. I think Golden State is going to start limiting.
Seems like we might have lost Brad Powers there. I don't know what happened. Sounds like he got cut off a little bit there. I don't know. But see if we can get him back on the broadcast here to finish up those final thoughts regarding that game between Chicago and Golden State. But, you know, it's kind of incredible here with so many different wagering angles, two conference tournaments, to the end of the regular season. It may be best to limit your exposure a little bit in college basketball because there are so many of these things going on. Now, of course, that being said, it seems like there's a decent amount of line value here as well. But with so much going on, you have to be mindful of so many different things. Brad, we got you back on the line here?
Yeah, I mean, I could hear you talking. You're like, hey, we lost Brad Powers. And I'm like, whoa, what? No, I'm still talking. I can still hear you. But I apologize for that if that was on my end.
No, it was probably on our end. But in any event, you like Golden State Chicago under the total tonight?
Yeah, let's go under the total. Looks like it's getting played into. The sharp markets are playing into it. I mean, shop around. I mean, there's some 219.5s out there, but it looks like some places are moving it to 217.5. So if shop around, get it. Golden State offensively, not the same, obviously, away from home. Even though their totals lines have been priced almost exactly the same. Average totals line for a Golden State game, about 223 at home and around 223 on the road. But the reality is, I mean, the under's 21-10 in their road games. They don't bring the offense. I think their defense still is undervalued. I mean, they're number two in the league as far as defensive efficiency. Chicago is the best under team in the league, 36-24, if you blindly bet the under in all their games. And Chicago just played a game where they allowed 125 points to Denver. That was their most points that they allowed all season. So I expect some defensive intensity from them. Go with the under, Golden State Chicago tonight, under 219.5.
Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, number one, if you want something for free, and it probably shouldn't be for free, to be perfectly honest with you, as far as the amount of information, but if you're a college football junkie like myself, you want to get kick-started for the season, because we already mentioned about after next week, half the teams will be playing or already finished with spring practice. Got you covered. It's available, the Powers Pick Spring Football Preview. Everything that you could want about college football this time of year, especially in the betting markets, week one lines, futures, all that, power ratings. Get it right now for free at Brad Powers Sports. And then for all of you that are looking for March Madness action and you want the VIP service for the entire month of March through the national championship game on April the 3rd, $99 for Brad Powers Sports March Madness VIP.
That's at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Brad, thank you so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again early next week.
All right. Sounds good, my friend. Take care.
Well, apologies to our listeners there. I have no idea what happened when the line cut out. Must have just been on my end. So if Brad talked over himself a little bit there, I certainly do apologize for that. But, you know, I need to hear what's going on. Otherwise, I don't know if you can hear what's going on. So hopefully we'll go without a hitch here the rest of the show. On our second professional handicapper of the day, that is Mr. Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Great, Adam. March Madness is upon us. Most exciting time of the year.
Yes, sir. It definitely is. Is this the craziest 3-4 weeks of the year for you?
You know, it probably is. I mean, for me, I actually would say no, thinking about it a little more clearly. I think November is, because November you have both college football and the NFL in mid-gear, or college football, at least in its last final month. You have the NBA starting, and you're trying to get a grasp of the 351 college basketball teams. So I would say those couple weeks in November are a little more hectic for me trying to do all four sports.
Well, I know you sent me an email here real quickly right before you came on the air, and we were having that discussion about the best line and market entry and all that type of thing with Brad Powers, and you've got some thoughts on it. So the floor is yours, sir.
Well, you know, my thought is this. If you watch the offshore books, there are probably 70% of them connected. They will not open until the first book opens, and they open what their line is. So when you see a first number come out, you guys were talking about Murray State 1. That is one book opening a number, taking a $500 or $1,000 bet from their sharpest player, and they're going to move the line accordingly, and then the other place is following suit. So I don't think people should react to an opening number that's there for just a millisecond that maybe one or two people in the entire universe can play. I think they should be concerned when there are legitimate line moves, when multiple casinos, both offshore and in Vegas, have that number, and then it gets moved across the board. So I'm not quite as strong as you guys were on that. I just wanted to throw my 10 cents in on that thought.
No, that's perfectly fair, and I think that's a reasonable point to make. And, you know, so when people talk about getting the quote-unquote best line, is that a pet peeve of yours then?
It is, because there's a lot of handicappers. You know, we're not going to mention names, but there's handicappers here that move the lines, and they're going to bet the games themselves, and their customers can't get those lines. So, you know, to me, you know, getting the best line is, if you have a power rating number in your head, you don't worry about what the line is. The line is made by lines makers and computers, where they're going to get equal money on both sides. Just because there's an opening line doesn't mean there's not value. Just because the line moves 2 points doesn't mean there's not value. They put out a line where they thought they're going to get 50% money on both sides, make the clean 10% vig, and that's their job as bookmakers. Their job is not to put out a sharp line. Their job is not to put out a line where what is an accurate line. So I think there's value even if a line moves. I'm not afraid to play into a game if there's a line move, if I really believe in it. Because, and that for that reason, you know, sharp money means one thing, but sharp money is probably only right 56% of the time. That means it's wrong 44% of the time.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and maybe I didn't convey my side of it as well as I should have, because, you know, I mean, like I said, I've always preached to people to get the best number that they can. I mean, if you talk about NHL money lines, for example, if something opens 145 minus 145, you don't want to make a habit of playing minus 165 if you don't have to. You know, now, of course, that's something that could have moved very quickly, and the money line market is, you know, a little bit less efficient than the spread market, I would say. So it can be a little bit more challenging to get some of those earlier numbers. But, you know, still, it is one of those things where a number may open 5.5. It'll close 7. If you're getting 6.5, that's great. If you're getting 7, that can be something that's a little bit more of a gray area.
Shopping, absolutely. I completely agree with you. But when you're looking at your screens and only 2 of the 15 casinos have numbers, you know, that is not what I consider the best line available. You know, having an out at every single location is not feasible. So I completely agree. Once the line is set, you're doing yourself the biggest disservice in gaming if you're not trying to shop that line. And remember, we talk about money lines. Money lines and the spread are independent. So you may have a team that's laying, I'm going to talk basketball for a minute, laying 2.5 in one game, and their money line could be minus 150. You could have a team laying 3.5, and their money line could be 150. So shop those independently. There are times where you may have more value betting a team with a line, and other times you have more value betting a team with a money line, because a game moves spread-wise, they do not automatically move it on the money line. It takes a separate bet on the money line wager to move that number.
Well, that's one of the things I like. I mean, you send me over your premium selections each day, and a lot of times you're talking about, you know, situations where you're saying, you know, I would play this number up to X, you know, because sometimes people just aren't going to be able to get that -7, that -8, but you want to let them know that it's good up to -9, -9.5. And I honestly wish that all handicappers would do it like that, because, you know, like we just talked about, a lot of people don't have access to that best number. And, you know, because of the way that the industry is run, because people want to make sure that their records look as good as possible, there could have been a 2.5 up for 5 minutes, but that may be what that number is getting tracked at. And that's just so misleading to all the customers.
And it works both ways, because not only do I want the customers, you know, to know there's a better number out there, I also want them to know they don't have the worst number out there. If I put out a game and it says +2.5, the customer sees a 2.5 and grabs it, I'd be doing a disservice that maybe there's only 10% of the places that have 2, But perhaps that person, if he shopped one more place that he had an out, he might have gotten the two. So while there are times that I put out a line that is maybe available in only 10 or 15% of the places, and then I put out the higher line as well, I want to do my customers the service of letting them know there's a range. Perhaps they can get the better number. Most people I know can't, but you want to put the high and the low in there to give them the ability to see where their line is and where, what they might be able to find out there in a buyer's market.
Well, I'm glad that you wanted to make it a point to talk about this. I'm glad that, A, I was able to clarify a little bit more what my position is, and B, you know, to get the really strong analysis and the strong thoughts that you have about it. Because, you know, I mean, as somebody that's in the industry like you are, as somebody that's, you know, critiqued against your peers, doing it the right way sometimes isn't going to be the most profitable way, but, you know, being honorable about it is absolutely the way to go. And like you said, I mean, we know people, we aren't going to name names here on the show, but, you know, there are some people that can be a little bit misleading in terms of the numbers that they're grading themselves on. And it's just not fair to the customers to do it that way.
You know, my business is built on 80% of my customers have been with me for over 5 years, you know, season-long packages, and that's just the way I handle my business. It's, you know, in the end, it doesn't matter if I say I won or lost. It matters if that person cashed that ticket or not. So, you know, and there are some situations that you don't know. No matter what I grade a ticket, you know, there's some games that there's going to be a win, a loss, and a push, and it could be split right across the board. Well, then you just do what you think is the best. But, you know, as I talked, when I grade my lines, and we talked about this on an earlier show, I like looking at where I think the majority of people bet the game, regardless of what number I put it at, good or bad, no matter what the game opened, regardless of what the game closed, where I feel the true majority of my customers play that game is how I grade a game.
All right, well, let's talk here about some conference tournament futures betting. Is this something that you dabble in? Do you like to take some pre-tournament positions?
You know, I haven't up until this year now that I'm in Vegas. And I'll tell you, there have been some big, you know, we've talked about some big underdogs hitting. And one interesting change this year. Now, this may have occurred. Again, this is my first year being in Vegas, seeing all these numbers posted when they get posted. Most places have a futures bet on each team in the conference with the favorites down to the long shot. The Westgate, which is the largest sports book, the old Las Vegas Hilton, is still one of the standard centers out here. They actually switched it up this year. And an example in the Missouri Valley Conference, they only have a future bet on Illinois State, on Wichita State, and Northern Iowa, and then the rest of it is the field. They're limiting their liability by having four equal-type bets and then the field ranging everyone else if there is an upset in the conference. So I found that interesting. Again, you know, they're, while they're still old-time sportsbook, we see them taking less and less risks as we progress because they've gotten burned in the past.
And I don't want to go off on a rant about this, but, I mean, it kind of pisses me off because – when I look at conference tournament futures betting, I'm looking for those teams that are in that 4, 5, 6, 7 seed range, the ones that if they go on a run, if they have enough upside to do that, you look for opportunities to guarantee profit later in the tournament, and when it's done like that, you really don't have that opportunity. So I understand it from their point of view, but, you know, I mean, I could go on a long-winded rant about all the 6-5 blackjack down on the strip now and how, you know, odds have been lowered on craps games and all that. But it's just another one of those things where I understand it from a business perspective. It's just not great for the consumer.
And you got to remember, futures, you know, the hold on futures is 5 times what it is on a normal wager. If, you know, a true future bet would be, you know, if they had $100,000 split up and these teams were all bet accordingly, and if this team won, they would get paid out that. But, you know, and they would hold their 10%, but it's not true at all. So, again, you got to be careful with futures, especially when you're taking the favorites. I would always stay away from betting a favorite. If you have a favorite team and you're betting them as a dog, that's great. There's situations that I clearly look at. But for the most point, you know, the future numbers are lowered so much that if you have an underdog, let's say you have a 4 seed and you bet them on the money line, parlayed it again on the money line and parlayed it on the money line, I'm going to say 9 out of 10 times you would have gotten paid more than you would have hitting that team in the future.
Yeah, the money line rollover is something we've talked about a little bit here on some of the past shows, and I'm glad to hear you bring it up here as well because, you know, as you mentioned, just getting into the betting side a little bit more with more availability out there in Vegas, and, you know, this is one of the things that you learn when you're managing your bankroll as a bettor is looking for opportunities to maximize your investment, and the money line rollover, definitely one of those because, like you said, more often than not, it's nowhere close to the true odds, and there was kind of an example of this that I was looking at a little bit here today. I saw, I believe it was at Bet Online, North Florida was plus 1,600 to win the Atlantic Sun. Now, if they win their game against Lipscomb tonight, they're in the championship game, but they're plus 350-ish tonight. They'll probably be plus 600 or so tomorrow, maybe a little bit higher than that against Florida Gulf Coast if they win. So, you know, that's another one of those situations where you have to weigh that risk-reward of the futures price versus just rolling the money line over.
Again, if you have a 50-to-1 and you're putting on a few dollars, I understand that because you don't have the monies and it's not worth it. But anything in that smaller range, I completely agree with you that while it's fun to hit one of those, it's one of those things that if after it's over, you added up what you spent and then you would have played it differently, I would think you'd see more times than not you're ahead the other way.
Well, and one of the cool things about the money line rollover is, as we've talked about here on the show, is hedging is easy because you just stop playing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, an injury, a situation where, you know, something happens, you lose a couple players, suspension or whatever, you then have the ability to do what you want or keep some of the profit and perhaps roll some over. I'm one of those guys that, you know, be it a handicapper and should lean to be on the conservative side. If I'm on a run, I'm going to keep something into that run. I would pull out my original bet. I would pull out a two-time investment, and then I would continue to play some of it just because when those things happen, you don't want to ever be in a situation where, oh, wow, I would have won this all had I stopped, but you could do it and have a profit or in the long run.
That's an excellent point. If you start with $100 and you're up to $700, nothing says you have to put $700 on the next game. You can, you know, scale it back and have a little bit of a partial hedge there as well, where you are still guaranteeing yourself some profit. So that's a really excellent point there. So we've talked, obviously, this is a change to handicapping the postseason as opposed to the regular season because you don't have these opportunities available to you in the regular season. How else does your handicapping change in the postseason?
Oh, the power ratings are much less important. When, you know, a power rating for me right now can change 3 or 4 or 5 points. And when we get into the conference tournaments, I don't even look at my power ratings. I just look at how the games were played, what happened. You know, the situation of looking at depth for the second and third games, the situation of seeing what the halftime score was. I wouldn't give out a game to my customers without absolutely reading both sides of that conference tournament, knowing what the halftime scores were, looking at the basket-by-basket runs to make sure someone didn't need to exert a ton of effort
energy
trying to come back from a 15-point lead, you know, in the last 4 minutes. When you see a final score, that doesn't mean this team didn't go on an 18-0 run to finish that game, and it took all of their effort and energy to get there. So a final score is the one thing I don't want to look at. I know the team won because they're playing the next day. How they got there, what the situation was, making sure everyone was healthy, and then moving forward from there. So I say power ratings much less important. Situational handicapping much more important.
All right, well, let's use that Murray State Morehead State example here again because it's the one that's in the top of my mind, and this is a game that went to double overtime last night. Murray State prevailed. Now they play Morehead State. What would your opening number have been on this game? And what I want to do here is see, you know, if we can figure out how much the odds makers accounted for the fact that game went to double overtime last night.
Well, you know, let me just do this. You know, let's go to, you know, this week's guide. Murray State is a 70.8, and they are playing
Morehead State.
Morehead State, excuse me. I got lost on my sheet here. Morehead State is a 70.5. So in my mind, those teams are equal.
Okay, and then the number opened Morehead State -1. Of course, that was a number that wasn't available to a whole lot of people. Now it's pushed up to 3. So based on the power ratings that you have in your guide, it seems like the odds makers didn't necessarily put in a whole lot of emphasis to that double overtime game.
They don't. And, you know, and the second game, I think people overreact to the second game. These are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids playing with enthusiasm to get into March Madness. I don't take the second game in a conference tournament and worry about it too much. I look at the teams. When we get to the third and fourth game, that's a different story. But kids have played two games in 3 nights. So playing back-to-back games in a hotel, you're not going to classes, you're not studying, you're practicing. That's all you're talking about. The second game I don't worry about. You know, now I did not get into those games yet at the bottom of the schedule, so I don't know what happened in either one of those games besides what you're telling me. So I'm going to refrain from going any further in the game because I don't want to mislead anyone. But straight power ratings say there is an overreaction. And you got to remember, there's sometimes games are on TV, there's sometimes games aren't on TV, there's sometimes that, you know, a double overtime game and is the play of the day on ESPN. So all of a sudden Joe Public goes, oh, look how this team is great. And there's a quick overreaction from that. So I find that a lot of times with mid majors or these conference tournaments, you know, these kids, you're never going to see a Murray State highlight on ESPN. And all of a sudden, because it's a double overtime win to advance, it's on ESPN. And all of a sudden teams think, oh, Murray State, I like them, I've heard of them, they're the Racers. Oh, they were in the tournament 12 years ago and they won a game for me, so I'm going to play them. So again, each situation is different, but those things do occur.
No, I think that's another really strong point too. And one of the things I've talked about when I've had odds makers on the show here before, and we had a good buddy of ours, a good buddy of mine, Matt Lindemann, on the show, and he's done both sides. He's done odds making and bookmaking, adjusting numbers, moving them around. We complicate the process of setting these numbers because what happens is they put up a number, they want to get a number up, try and balance the action, and it's the bookmaker's responsibility to balance that action as well, as good as possible, by moving the number around. And sometimes they just let the market set, you know, where something's going to be, and then make sure that they don't get caught behind an avalanche of steam.
And again, it's not the amount of money bookmakers take. It's the people that are betting them. You know, the Super Bowl is a prime example. Some of the books in Vegas said they lost on the over. You know, Joe Public is going to bet the favorite and the over. Now, most sharps in Vegas were on the under. So despite having more money on the over, that line dropped 2.5 to 3 points because of the people that were betting. You know, there's an example, you know, a bookmaker that I'm friends with here for one of the larger books, they're in multiple casinos. You know, he said they had more money continue to come in on the over. It's those $50, those $100 bets, those $500 bets at casino windows from the public that don't mean anything. But if one person online makes a $5,000 bet and they still have $10,000 bet on the other side, they may move that line despite that. So money does not move the line. The right people betting the game moves the line.
I want to ask you about this because we've got a lot of small conference tournaments now. A few of them are at neutral sites. A lot of them here that are going on. The games are hosted by the higher seeded campus. I know in the Big South, for example, Winthrop hosts the quarters and the semis no matter what. And then if they move on to the championship game, they'll host that as well. But what about these neutral site tournaments that are coming up? Of course, we've got all the heavy hitters next week. ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, SEC, Big East, you know, all these types of conferences. What about home court for these? Because some teams are just simply closer to the tournament site than others.
Oh, I think that holds true. I think, I don't remember the exact number, but I think, well, what was it, North Carolina had won 20 straight postseason games in the state of North Carolina. You know, the big blue follow no matter where. I mean, if you're in the state of North Carolina, they're going to come follow you and support you. So it's a big advantage, you know, and I think so more so. This is a little after the fact, but, you know, it's a game I left home last night, you know, in the Vermont played, and in the American East Conference, they play one day, then they have 3 days off, then they have 3 days off. So it's basically playing a home schedule, but you're playing a tournament game. You know, I think they won by 40 points last night, but, you know, they were by far, they have an 18-game winning streak. They're the best small team that's not normally lined on the board, and a huge edge. So home edge, very important. But I think in games 3 and 4 of the conference tournament, it's the biggest edge. Game one, you have split. Remember, even if there is a conference tournament at home, let's say UNLV is hosting, UNLV always hosts the Mountain West. You know, while UNLV, not this year, I mean, when they normally sold out, they had their 12 to 14,000 fans. But each school gets 1,000 seats. So even when you're at home, you don't have that same home field. But what happens in the second and third round, those teams that lose in the first and second round, those fans go home. Those fans sell those seats to locals waiting outside. And all of a sudden, the home crowd grows for those games 3 and 4 because they're now able to get in buying those teams that lost their tickets. The fan bases are down to 2, one of them having only 1,000 seats. And the other, the home team having the remaining seats. So early on, it's much more neutral. My home court gets stronger as the tournament progresses.
I think that's a really interesting point, especially, you know, you mentioned the ACC, which isn't in North Carolina this year. And then also another one is the Big Ten, where you've got one team in Maryland with a very clear home court advantage. And if they do make a deep run here in the Big Ten tournament, and realistically, I mean, they have a very good chance to, because the top of the conference has just been kind of bad here lately. That could end up being a really significant thing for Maryland.
All right, I want to go on a rant for a minute.
Go ahead.
Why are we playing the ACC in Brooklyn, New York? Okay, go ahead.
That's a good question.
Why, you know, the Big Ten wants the New York money. The ACC wants the New York money. But come on, folks. We're playing the ACC tournament in Brooklyn, New York. There's just something wrong with that.
I mean, all right, they moved it out of North Carolina because there was, you know, the whole thing with the there was some discrimination. All that went on. But put it in Atlanta or, yes, I don't know, Columbia, South Carolina, something not Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you know, them being in D.C. makes much more sense than the Big Ten. Now, again, the Big Ten has, you know, the Rutgers market and the Maryland market. And I can understand the Big Ten because their entire financial structure was to take Rutgers, Maryland, make a footprint into the Northeast. And by doing so and committing to future events there, it allows them to continue with that footprint. So the Big Ten, that's part of their business plan, and I understand that part. So, but yes, that is one where you're going to have a huge home edge, and you're going to have it where Maryland is not a team I think could win the Big Ten in any other venue, you know, outside of having that huge home edge. But I think they can stick their nose in there and make a run at it now.
I mean, next year, the Big Ten tournament's at Madison Square Garden. So, I don't know.
Again, that's the Rutgers footprint. That's what they – when those two teams came into the conference, this was a long-term plan that they decided to do. We're going to appease Maryland, give them that there. We're going to appease Rutgers, putting it in New York City, and then we'll come back to the Midwest after that. So, again, from the Big Ten standpoint – agree or disagree, they had a business philosophy set up when they took these teams, when they started the plan to take these teams 6 years ago, and this is just what's coming to fruition now because these have been long-term plans. The ACC, as you said, was a reaction that they had to make a change, and I guess they just found that to be the most accommodating.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it makes sense for the SEC to be in Nashville, and the Pac-12 in Las Vegas is really intriguing to me. I mean, you would think the LA schools would probably be the best represented there in terms of that conference. Do you feel like there is any sort of home court edge for the Pac-12 tournament?
You know, I have not been to a Pac-12 tournament. I will be going this year. But, you know, obviously the two Arizona and the two LA schools are drivable. Basically, everyone else is flying in. So I think there's a huge edge for those four programs. I expect to see a strong Arizona crowd. You know, UCLA fans, they're in football and basketball, they show up, but you don't get the same support from those LA-type fans. So my guess would be Arizona would be the best supported and having the biggest alumni base and being about 5.5-hour drive that we would see them. But You know, we'll talk about that in a couple shows and let you know what the true reactions are from the ground.
All right, so Ralph, I want to ask you about the rest of the regular season here. We've done a lot of talking about conference tournaments, and of course we can keep doing that next week. Looks like we'll probably have you on that Tuesday show next week. What about the rest of the regular season? Because you still have these major conferences that have a game or two left to play, and also some of the smaller conferences, the mid-majors that haven't started their conference tournaments yet. What's your approach here over these next 4 days?
Oh, it's the same. You know, I give a little more to where teams are as far as seedings go. But don't discount winning your conference. I mean, that is still the mainstay that these kids live and die by, at least the basketball programs. The kids want to go to March Madness. That's all they're concerned about. But, you know, having a basketball program and winning the Big Ten or winning your conference is something that is incredible. Now, you know, I was looking ahead to the situational plays and the technical plays, and I didn't use this as a situational play, but it was close. And, you know, something to look at in the Big 12 is that, you know, Kansas goes to Oklahoma State on Saturday. Now, something I play on often is if a team doesn't play midweek while their opponent does, I think it's a huge edge. You have a week of practice. You can actually practice several times and work on that team's game plan. In this case, I actually downgrade Kansas. Kansas already has won their 17,000th Big 12 tournament in a, you know, conference in a row. They're the AP number one. I think the off week this week hurts them. I think you had Oklahoma State getting the AP team number one. Senior day, your final game. You can knock off Kansas. I actually like Oklahoma State. The line's only going to be about pick 'em because Oklahoma State's playing great ball. But in this case, not having a game midweek is probably the only time all year that I'll think I'll fade a team because of that. Just because it is Kansas, you know you're a number one seed. You know you're done with the season. What do you care about going to Oklahoma State? You're too clear in the standings. You've already clinched. So that's something I'm looking at with the regular season where I think it's an advantage to the other team. Most times I like playing the rest of the team. There's teams that play, again, this is late in the year. I mean, these are those final games. So if you have one extra day rest now, I think it means a lot. Playing Tuesday instead of Wednesdays or Wednesday instead of Thursday when you're both playing on Saturdays, I look at those situations. I look at teams that are in, if you can get the 1-4 seeding. Now, we always look at the teams that are ahead in the conference, first and second. Remember, most of these places have the top four seeds or first-round buys. That's vital. If you have a team jockeying for that 4 and 5 seed, that coach and that team is as motivated to get that number four seed as any team in the league. So that's something I look at that I don't know if a lot of people do, but it's always up in my handicapping tools. Team fighting for four seed is a big check mark to look at that team to perhaps be a play.
Yeah, it certainly helps to play one less game, especially if you're in one of those leagues where you do have to play, say, 4 or 5 days in a row. To get that automatic bid. Now, I guess another point here to make is this is something we've talked about on past segments and something we'll probably talk about heading into the conference tournaments as well, is you've got a lot more public involvement here at this stage of the game because March Madness is on the horizon. Conference tournaments are very exciting as well. There's all-day basketball. People like that idea. They can bet games while they're at work. They can follow along with them. You know, if they're staying at home or taking vacation time, they can just sit and watch basketball all day. There's something really appealing about that to a lot of people. So we've got a lot more public involvement. Are you going to take an extra look at those blue blood teams like Kentucky, UCLA, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, a team you already mentioned? Do you sort of look for more reasons to go against those types?
You know, I don't look for a reason. I don't just say I'm going to look to play against these teams. Each situation is different for me. I'm going to look at each situation with a clean slate. I don't like coming into those days with preconceived notions. Now, there are times that I'll say, you know, this team doesn't look like they care to win. You know, I'm going to bring up an example last night. Since it was on ESPN, it is NBA, but I think it translates into college and sometimes what happens. You know, the Cavs are at Boston, the team that's just behind them in the East. And this is a huge game, and, you know, LeBron doesn't like to lose games. But in the fourth quarter, with 2 minutes to go, they had Williams, the two Williams guys, one that just signed his second 10-day contract, and one who's playing his first game with a new team, in with 2 minutes to go in a tied game. That showed me this. Cleveland didn't care about winning the game. Cleveland wants to see those kids play with the game on the line in a playoff atmosphere on the road, because those are the people that are going to play with them coming up when they play Golden State in the championship. So, you know, those aren't the guys you normally see on the court. But, again, there's situations like that. You know, there's always a discussion when you're in these conference tournaments. If you know you have a 2, 3, 4 seed, do you really want to play those four games in four nights? Risk injury, risk people playing with fatigue, you know, or do you just pull something off? Do you try some new things to see what will happen for the tournament? Do you rest some guys because you're playing again Thursday, Saturday coming up in a few days? So I don't look at any situation, any team, and say I'm going to play them, I'm not going to play them. I think each case is independent of itself.
You already mentioned one good situational angle for Oklahoma State and Kansas. What else are you looking at here situationally this week?
You know, before we get to that, I want to just jump back and talk about a mid-major that I think will make it. And I just want to go on the record as this. We talked about this in another show, mid-majors making the tournaments, and we talked about last year only Wichita State made it. Northern Iowa won the Missouri Valley. Wichita State was the only at-large mid-major. You know, last year, St. Mary's beat Gonzaga twice in the regular season, lost in the conference finals, and didn't get in with a 25-4 record. This year, they lost twice to Gonzaga, but I'm going to call them into the tournament. Looking through that body of work, I'm going to say St. Mary's makes the NCAA tournament, even if they don't win the West Coast Conference this week. Looking back at them, they beat Nevada. Nevada's going to win the Mountain West. They beat Dayton. Dayton beat Virginia Commonwealth last night. Dayton wins the Atlantic 10. They beat Irvine. Irvine has Davis on Saturday. They'll win the Big West. Losing to an AP number one twice, or a team that was ranked at one time an AP number one, no issues. Their other loss, UT Arlington. RPI has Arlington in the top 30. So I'm going to call St. Mary's in. Just want to get on the record. I didn't think they would make it earlier this year. I've changed my mind, even as an at-large. Jumping back, situational play this week. I just mentioned it, Irvine. Irvine is one game up in the Big West. UC Davis is a game behind them. UC Davis plays tonight. Irvine's been the number one or number two team in that conference for 4 years. They have same-season revenge. First time in 2 years they've played a team second after losing the first game. Irvine won 28 games last year. They lost the CIT championship. They're a team accustomed to winning. UC Davis, meanwhile, was 6-10 in conference play last year. They were an 11-win team overall. UC Davis plays tonight. We talked about the extra day of rest. Irvine off a win at Riverside last night. Irvine plays Hawaii tonight. Extra day of rest. Situational play is going to be Irvine. First time they played this year when UC Davis won. UC Davis was a 3-point favorite. Turn that around, Irvine should be -5. I actually think Irvine will be -6 or -7 because of the way they're playing. Four straight wins and covers. And the last thing is that the last away game UC Davis played was February 18th. So they've had four straight home games. That's very unusual in the conference to not rotate weekends with home and away. So having not played on the road in 3 weeks, situational play is UC Irvine.
I like it. I like your thought process there. And I believe, if I remember when we talked about this game earlier in the week, with a different handicapper, Luke Nelson didn't play that first game against UC Davis, I don't think. Or maybe he was severely banged up, and he's Irvine's best player. So he should be back.
Yeah, you know,
he
was out about 8 games there. I'm going to guess he didn't play, but I do not know that off the top of my head. So I don't want to answer either way.
All right, then how about the technical play for this week?
Technical play, you know, being in Vegas, I've read about UNLV just getting lambasted. They were on a 9-game losing streak. They have the worst offense in the Mountain West. They have the second worst defense in the Mountain West. And guess what? They won their final home game last night against Utah. Nothing spectacular. They shot 40%. Utah State shot 40%. Just a game that they outlasted a bad team on the road and got a win. Now they're going to Fresno in the final game of the Mountain West. Fresno on a 7-1 ATS run at home. They are going for that 4 seed. This could fit in the situational play as well. They can lock up that 4 seed and get the first round bye. It's huge. Fresno head coach Rodney Terry, this is a situation I like. He took over a team that had 11 wins. They had a senior-laden team, won 21 3 years ago, played a lot of freshmen, had 15 wins, had 25 last year. Now, while they only have 18 wins this year, they're a team that's playing very well. Again, they just knocked off Boise on the road. 7-1 ATS at home, UNLV poor on the road. I like Fresno laying the 6 to 7 points to a UNLV team that had lost 9 straight, playing as bad as it gets. First front page of the paper every day how bad they are, and they're off that rare win.
I like it. Two really strong plays there from Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, what else is going on over at the website right now?
You know what? We're cranking away. Had a poor night last night, but a great run overall. We're on a 16-7 run. Daily plays available at WagerTalk.com. My March Madness package, $199. You can get that through me at the office. Just email me at calsports@AOL. And I'll be putting out a conference tournament guide next week with brackets for all the conferences. That'll be up at WagerTalk. And then, of course, a March Madness guide as well.
That's at CalSportsLV on Twitter. Ralph, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again early next week.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
Great stuff there today from both Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels. One thing I want to mention here to wrap up today's show, a couple things actually. The first, use that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook BTB Radio. $10 free bet just for signing up. 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other thing, price news for the Boston Red Sox. Now, of course, this has to happen pretty much a day after I post my American League East season win totals. And you know, all I can do is laugh about it because this is something that kind of happens to us on the show a little bit. And, of course, it happens to me here now. But, of course, that pales in comparison to what it means to the Boston Red Sox. Now, there is very real concern that David Price needs Tommy John surgery, which would take him out for this year and also probably the first month or month and a half of next season, if not a little bit more than that. Tommy John, generally a 12 to 15 month rehab and recovery period. And then, of course, it takes you a little bit of time to get back into rhythm as well. He'd wind up making 5 or 6 minor league rehab starts in all likelihood. This would be a significant blow to the Boston Red Sox. Now, the Red Sox are loaded with talent, and I do like some of their starting pitching depth, as I talked about in my write-up. You can go and get my thoughts and analysis and, of course, a pick, which now, you know, may put a little bit of an asterisk next to it since the dynamics of the team have changed a little bit. But, you know, you get a situation here where this is exactly what I talked about wanting to make sure you wait until probably the middle of March or so to start putting in some of these season win total plays, maybe even late March, because you lose a player like David Price, and that's a significant problem. I mean, I think the win total adjust a win and a half-ish or so, maybe 2 wins. As it turns out, I went with the under in my pick anyway. You know, for those that did grab the early number, I guess that's a positive for you. But what I would do here is as a general rule of thumb, if I'm looking at the under, I'm okay with playing it early because no team is going to make any sort of trade or any sort of free agent signing at this stage of the game that's going to overly impress me. If I'm looking at an over, I am waiting. I'm biting my fingernails. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm hoping that nobody gets hurt after I make that play, which I wouldn't make it until late March. So if it's an over that I like, I'd wait. If it's an under that I like, you know, I mean, there are some opportunities there to get situations like this where at 92.5, you know, the under looks pretty good now without David Price. I mean, there's good pitching depth for the Red Sox, but you're talking about a guy that consistently throws 200 innings a year. Replacing 200 innings with league average or better production is very, very, very hard. And David Price was certainly well above average. So I don't know if any of the offshores have taken this win total down. If you want to try to fire on it right now, I certainly understand. But again, my general rule of thumb here is if I'm looking at an under, I'm okay with playing it early. If I'm looking at an over, I'm waiting to make sure that nothing happens like what happened with David Price here. Now, as far as the rest of the American League East goes, because the loss of David Price would, in theory, dictate, you know, some of my other opinions of teams in the American League East. I already like New York a little bit, Toronto a little bit, so doesn't really change anything for me in that respect. And Boston is still much better than Baltimore and Tampa Bay, even without David Price. So it doesn't really alter too much. But if we get this situation here moving forward, you know, obviously it could have an impact in some of these divisions. So I just wanted to take a couple of seconds and touch on that here. Again, AL Central will be coming out later today. But this David Price news is definitely concerning for the Red Sox. And, you know, another thing about a big injury like this is, yes, you have teams that have depth, and Boston has a significant amount of depth, as I've already talked about. But now they're taking a guy who was depth and putting him into the starting rotation every 5 days. So that weakens the depth. It's good to have depth, but once you tap into that depth, you start to lose some of it. So this is really a twofold or even threefold type of thing when you lose a star player like this, whether it's a pitcher or a position player. So keep watching all this stuff here throughout spring training. It's very important to pay close attention to these injury problems. And obviously this is one that definitely stands off the page as a very significant one. I certainly feel for Red Sox fans because this is a big blow for a team that was expected to do big things. But the nice thing is they've got Chris Sale. I mean, if they didn't have Chris Sale, this would be an earth-shattering medical announcement. Because they have Chris Sale, at least they still have that ace in the staff. And no, Rick Porcello is not an ace. I'm sorry for those that love Rick Porcello, but Rick Porcello is not an ace. But they've got Chris Sale, so that helps exponentially. But, you know, these things can pop up here in spring training, so keep an eye out for all of them. Once the win totals are posted, they're posted. I'm not going to change the picks. I can't go back and do that, you know, sort of revisionist history, even if there is a big injury. So as you read it throughout the month of March, David Price is going to be in it. I'll go in, I'll make an edit. I will make an author's note, but it won't change, you know, the play that I've already put out there. You know, you can obviously adjust in your mind if there is an injury that, you know, comes on a team where I like the over or something like that. You can adjust in your own mind. But for me, you know, I don't think I can make a change like that after something has already been posted and after people have already read it. So, again, it doesn't really apply to the Red Sox because my lean was to the under with them anyway. But just wanted to throw that out here for a point to make on today's show. Not exactly sure who's going to be joining us tomorrow. No Rob Pozzola. He'll be at the Sloan Analytics Conference in Boston, so we won't have him. But we'll figure something out. We always do. So that'll do it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again.